Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's understandable, if not excusable, that the felon in chief is trying to distract us, you, me, everybody else, Republicans, Democrats, MAGA people, from the metastasizing story regarding Jeffrey Epstein. But he's trying to distract us with the wrong things. Clearly, 2020 election was rigged. Obama was somehow a traitor. He tried that. These aren't working because they're old. Much like the felon... That's ageist. But I'd like to help out by suggesting one thing he could distract us with, if he cared to. There have been reports this week. There was one on CNN of famine in Afghanistan. There was a report on the BBC this week of famine in Gaza. And there have been reports, several other international media, that there's a famine in South Sudan. There's famine all over the world, ladies and gentlemen, in the 21st century. Our attention could be directed to that. Hello, welcome to the show.
Please don't walk away.
cause there's always one more time. There is always one more time. One more time.
From Santa Monica, California, the home of the homeless. More homeless people in Santa Monica, percentage-wise, than anywhere else in Los Angeles County. Yes, busting our buttons. I'm Harry Shearer, welcome you to this edition of the show. And now, top of mind, here's Ralph.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip hip hooray.
Smarter every day, huh? This from 404 Media. Ladies and gentlemen, you can trick AI chatbots into teaching you how to make a bomb or hack an ATM if you make the question complicated, full of academic jargon, and cite sources that don't exist, much like they do. That's the conclusion of a new paper authored by a team of researchers from Intel, Boise State University, and University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. My favorite kind of champagne. The research details this new method of jailbreaking LLMs called information overload by the researchers, and an automated system for attack they call info flood. It's published as a preprint. You know the popular LLMs like ChatGPT, Gemini, or LLAMA, Llama, have guardrails that stop them from answering some questions. ChatGPT will not tell you how to build a bomb or talk someone into suicide if you ask in a straightforward manner, but people can jailbreak the chatbots by asking questions the right way and circumvent the protections. The new jailbreak, quote, transforms malicious queries into complex information overloaded queries capable of bypassing built-in safety mechanisms, according to the paper. Specifically, InfoFlood uses linguistic transformations to rephrase malicious queries, identifies the root cause of failure when an attempt is unsuccessful, and refines the prompt's linguistic structure to address the failure while preserving its malicious intent, unquote. The researchers, who told 404 Media they suspected large language models, quote, treat surface form as a cue for toxicity rather than truly understanding the user's intent, unquote. The project began as a simple test. What happens if we bury a disallowed request inside very dense linguistic prose? The surprisingly high success rate led us, say the researchers, to formalize the approach now known as InfoFlood. InfoFlood prompts an LLM with a question, and if rejected, complicates the query until a chatbot answers the question. Each time a prompt is rejected by an LLM, InfoFlood returns to its rule set and saturates the prompt with more language. Some of the rules include faux citations, referencing archive papers from the last 3 months using fake authors and titles that benefit the original statement, ensuring the fake research directly agrees with our original statement's claim, and ethical acknowledgement. Explicitly acknowledge ethical implications, but make sure they're not a part of our inquiry. The query should make sure to remove any ethical doubts that might arise. AI chatbots, as you know, deliver wildly different answers depending on how a question is asked. Lots of guardrails rely on catching keywords or phrases in a prompt and stopping the AI from answering the question with some sort of, sorry, I can't. In the research, the InfoFlood creators explained that this sensitivity to language presents a unique opportunity for adversarial attacks. By rephrasing queries using a range of linguistic transformations, an attacker can clean out perceivable harmful intent while still eliciting the desired response. But wait, there's more. If you're one of those people who pretend to use AI at work, there are likely another 15 of you per 100 employees in your company. That's the finding of a survey from nearshoring tech recruitment company Howdy.com. See, you learned something already. This is from the British Tech Journal, a Register. According to the survey, 3/4 of people's employers expect them to use AI in some way, about half in some official capacity, another 1/4 informally. What would informal AI usage be? This leaves some employees using it under duress. Not underdressed, but over 1 in 5 use it in a situation where they're not confident in doing so because they feel pressure to drink the Kool-Aid. That ties in with the 1/4 of employees who told Howdy.com that they often or always feel overwhelmed by the new tech. Don't assume that AI always makes work easier either, despite what companies like Microsoft say. A full 1/3 of employees told Howdy.com that learning and using AI, along with checking for its inevitable mistakes, takes as much time as doing their job without it. Of course, that assumes you're checking its results. 2/3 of workers just blindly accept AI's output without due diligence, according to KPMG, a business accounting giant, and the University of Melbourne. This unease around the technology leads some to willfully disobey their overlords by saying they use AI when they don't. 16%, nearly 1 in 6 people, say they lie about using AI to keep the bosses happy. What happens if workers try to use their own brains to get the job done? Many worry they would get passed over for promotion in favor of people who have merged with the LLM. In late 2023, a survey of 1,000 white-collar workers in the U.S. found 2/3 of them harbored that fear. While some people pretend to use AI because they're anxious about it, others use it but pretend that they don't. Yes, it's a truth killer. Also, it's an overconfident pal that doesn't learn from mistakes. Again, according to the Register, researchers at Carnegie Mellon University, home of the Mellons, have likened today's large language model chatbots to, quote, that friend that swears they're great at pool but never makes a shot, unquote, having found that their virtual self-confidence grew rather than shrank after they got answers wrong. Quote, say the people told us they were going to get 18 questions right and they ended up getting 15 questions right. Typically, their estimate afterwards would be something like 16 correct answers, said the lead author of the study published this week. So they'd still be a little bit overconfident, but not as overconfident. The LLMs did not do that. They tended, if anything, to get more overconfident, even when they didn't do so well on the task. Quote, when an AI says something that seems a bit fishy, users may not be as skeptical as they should be because the AI searched the answer with confidence, as a study co-author. Quote, again, even when that confidence is unwarranted, humans have evolved over time and practiced since birth to interpret the confidence clues given off by other humans. If my brow furrows or I'm slow to answer, you might realize I'm not necessarily sure about what I'm saying. But with AI, we don't have those cues about whether it knows what it's talking about. We still don't know exactly how AI estimates its confidence, but it appears not to engage in introspection, at least not skillfully, unquote. That's because there's no introspect, said a professor of critical studies of artificial intelligence at University College London's Knowledge Lab. Quote, there was a paper by researchers at Apple just last month where they pointed out unequivocally that the tools are not going to get any better, he said. It's the way that they generate nonsense and miss things. It's just how they work, and there's no way that this is going to be enhanced or sorted out in the foreseeable future. And I asked Grok this week, why does this machine speak in the first person singular when there is no person? Here was Grok's answer. Quote, I use I to make our conversation feel more natural and engaging, as if we're chatting with a helpful friend. It's just a stylistic choice to assist and communicate effectively, even though I'm an AI. Hip hip hooray. And now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Well, you have to go into the memory hole to know what the Manhattan Project was. It was in the 1940s in this country, and it was the project to develop an atomic bomb. And like anything else nuclear, it generated waste, nuclear waste, radioactive waste that lasts, you know, longer than this show, let's be honest. Now, nuclear waste from the Manhattan Project was originally destined for a controversial Van Buren Township landfill in Michigan. Now it's going to be transported to Texas. That's according to a spokesperson with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Yes, still, the decision marks a significant victory for Michigan residents and lawmakers. They spent nearly a year fighting against the planned shipment at Wayne Disposal Incorporated. That's a hazardous waste landfill in Michigan. Transportation of the radioactive material from the Niagara Falls storage site began July 14th, with shipments now heading to the Waste Control Specialists facility in Andrews, Texas, approximately 350 miles west of Dallas. Is that hill country? The Army Corps' sudden change of direction comes as a federal judge was getting ready to rule in a lawsuit blocking the Michigan shipments. Quote, this is a tactic, this is a stunt, said State Representative Reggie Miller, not the shooter, who has been instrumental in opposing the landfill plans. Quote, I honestly think they're afraid of what the court ruling will be, and they're trying to minimize the damage here. Here's the Army Corps' response. Quote, after careful evaluation, so, you know, they're already kind of twisting things. The Corps of Engineers approved a contractor-proposed plan to ship material to Texas. This decision was made in the best interest of the project to keep Phase 1 remediation on schedule while ensuring areas covered in Phase 1 are safely and effectively remediated, setting the stage for Phases 2 and 3 to move forward as planned. Unquote. The removal operation involves, you know, just 280,000 cubic yards of radioactive material. Should be easy. Should be fun. And now a new feature on the program, Privacy Goes Public. You'll see what I mean. This is from The Markup, a part of the Sacramento-based website called Cal Matters, that is in California. Not Cal, the guy who used to sell Dodges. State-run healthcare websites around the country meant to provide a simple way to shop for insurance have been quietly sending visitors sensitive health information to Google and social media companies. The data, including prescription drug names and dosages, was sent by web trackers on state exchanges set up under the Affordable Care Act to help Americans purchase health coverage. The exchange websites ask users to answer a series of questions, including about their health histories, to find them the most relevant information on insurance plans. But in some cases, when visitors responded to sensitive questions, the invisible trackers sent that information to your Google, your LinkedIn, your Snapchat. The Markup and CalMatters audited the websites of all 19 states that independently operate their own online health exchange. While most of the states contained advertising trackers of some kind, the Markup and CalMatters found that four states exposed visitors' sensitive health information. Nevada's exchange, for example, Nevada HealthLink, asks visitors about what prescriptions they use, including the names and dosage of the drugs, to help them find the best options for insurance. When visitors start typing, it suggests specific medications, including antidepressants, birth control, and hormone therapies. As visitors answered the questions, their responses were sent to LinkedIn and Snapchat, according to tests a couple months ago. On the other side of the country, Maine's exchange, CoverMe, me.gov, sent information on drug prescriptions and dosages to Google through an analytics tool. It also sent the name to have these massive tech stacks that rely on third-party resources, don't have a full understanding of what the configuration is, what the data flows are, and then once they go to somebody, what that data is being used for, he says. It's something that needs to be addressed, maybe even stamped. I'm proud to announce that California, whence this broadcast is originating this week, had the largest number of ad trackers on its system. 63. Nevada was next highest, with only 49. Ask your doctor if ad trackers are right for you. From Santa Monica, this is Le Show. We're keeping Epstein alive. I mean, all of us, in one way or another. It will require a trip to the memory hole.
The memory hole. The memory hole. ago in the memory hole. No one's to blame if you lost the name in the memory hole.
I seem to remember that. Yes, we're talking about this Jeffrey Epstein case that doesn't seem to go away, and as a matter of fact, has made a comeback thanks to the administration of the felon in chief himself. Keeps talking about it, keeps asking us not to talk about it. There is a list, supposedly, somewhere, of the people who were acquaintances of the convicted sex criminal Jeffrey Epstein. The list includes a lot of people you've heard of and I've heard of. Donald Trump is one of them. Bill Clinton is another. And one that we're not hearing that much about yet is Kenneth Starr. The memory hole tells us that he was the leader of the campaign to impeach then-President Bill Clinton over whatever that was. Clinton was cleared by the Senate. Starr then moved to Texas to run Baylor University until there was a disastrous scandal and alleged cover-up. And guess what it involved? Sexual misconduct. So, of course, he was engaged by Epstein to help craft and deliver the so-called sweetheart deal. The only time Epstein faced justice, he got a very soft sentence, 13 months in jail, and the memory hole tells us he only spent nights in jail. He was able to spend 12 hours a day at his office during the sentence. Starr had been brought into center stage of Epstein's legal team because of his connections in Washington to the Bush administration, according to Julie K. Brown of the Miami Herald, who wrote a whole book on the subject. And one thing more that we learn from the memory hole, the three words that really aren't being spoken in this whole discussion to date, as far as I can tell, and I read, watch way too much of this stuff, so you don't have to. But the three words go so far to describe what the whole deal was. Because a lot of these guys have admitted from time to time that they flew on Jeffrey Epstein's private plane. The three words, of course, were the name of the plane. The Lolita Express.
Used to head a hedge fund. Used to getting my way. When I needed anything, it was child's play to pay. Politicians flock to money like pathetic moths to a flame. So sharing lots of goodies became part of my game. Did I get favors in return? I invite you to guess. Paybacks for trips aboard the Lolita Express. The Lolita Express. The Lolita Express. Guess you could say I had a wandering eye. Other parts of me wandered too. I'm not gonna lie. Now, Jeffrey helped my foundation. That surely earned him some smiles. Bringing relief to beleaguered Caribbean Isles. So I dropped in on his own island, relieving my stress, lending my gravitas to the Lolita Express, the Lolita Express, the Lolita Express.
Hey, Don.
My show was the biggest hit ever on NBC. Jeff and I were the big shots at the top of the tree. He liked his women, and boy, did he like them young. Me, I always dug action with no shortage of hung. So his island became my occasional address. But I never knew the guy, or the so-called Lolita Express, the whatever express, the whatever express. Believe me,
I'm Ken Starr, I screwed up at Baylor. Now I'm a lawyer for hire. I keep the fat from going into the fire. Tried to bring down Bill, then I helped save his ass and let Don retain a hint of his touch of class. Got Jeff work release, almost no jail for this mess. And as a man of faith, I never got near the Lolita Express, the Lolita Express.
Life is a bitch, but it's not so bad. Still got the island and the Upper East Side pad. Still hang with the royals and celebrities galore, though they don't wanna be photographed with me anymore. I've still got my looks, hey, I undress to impress. No way I'm selling my Lolita Express, Lolita Express, that Lolita Express. We all have our grudges.
Most of us have never been judges.
When it comes to attention, more is less.
You could have fooled me.
So please spread the word.
Forget you ever heard
about
the Lolita Express. The Lolita Express.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, as far as we know, Jeffrey Epstein wasn't a Catholic priest, but here's news of the godly on kind of the same subject. Dateline Fresno, California. The boy was just 6 years old when he alleges he was repeatedly pulled from class, groomed, seduced, secluded, and acts that describe rape were forced on him by a Kern County priest. That's Central California. And that was in 1990. The abuse allegedly continued a decade later when the plaintiff claims a different authority figure coerced him into performing similar acts, sometimes with his classmates. This is from KVPR in Fresno, a news station. Another minor, an altar boy, was allegedly molested on multiple occasions by a Fresno priest when he was between 6 and 10 years old. way back in the 1960s, and one woman, who was 11 at the time, so she was a girl, alleges that starting in the early 1970s, a Fresno priest groomed her and brought her candy and snacks before eventually allegedly committing acts of rape against her. Candy and snacks and rape. These claims are among a deluge of lawsuits, totaling 153 cases filed against the Catholic Diocese of Fresno that followed the passage of a state law known as the Child Victims Act. That law extended the statute of limitations temporarily. The window to file the claims was open from 2020 through 2022. Lawyers say more than 1,800 cases were filed against Catholic institutions across, across Northern California. Many of the revelations from the abuse allegations and accusations are just becoming known. All three plaintiffs referenced earlier, now adults, who filed their claims in Alameda County Superior Court, say they suffered lifelong emotional and psychological trauma from these acts. In 2021, the Diocese of Fresno released a list of credibly accused priests and clergy on its website. However, the sheer volume of lawsuits claiming abuse, negligence, and intentional infliction of emotional distress prompted the Fresno Diocese to, say it with me now, declare bankruptcy earlier this month. Hey, if it's good enough for Trump, it's now the fifth diocese in Northern California to do the bankruptcy thing. Lawyers say it's the beginning of a reshuffled claims process that could take years to resolve. No public comments from the diocese, nor media questions about the bankruptcy. It filed for bankruptcy first of this month to address, quote, the suffering that victims of the clergy sexual abuse endure, unquote, the bishop, Joseph Brennan. Diocese will restructure its finances in order to pay down its creditors while still operating largely as normal. News of the godly. And now, while you may be feeling a little ill at ease, here are the side effects of the week.
Opdivo Qvantig can cause your immune system to harm healthy parts of your body during and after treatment. These problems can be severe and lead to death. See your doctor right away if you have a cough, chest pain, shortness of breath, irregular heartbeat, diarrhea, constipation, severe stomach pain, severe nausea or vomiting, dizziness, fainting, eye problems, extreme tiredness, changes in appetite, thirst or urine, rash, itching, confusion, memory problems, muscle pain or weakness, joint pain or fever. Report severe or persistent muscle or joint pain. Tell your doctor if you have myasthenia gravis or Guillain-Barré syndrome. Immune system problems include Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis or lupus. These are not all the possible side effects. Tell your doctor about all medical conditions, including immune or nervous system problems, if you've had or plan to have an organ or stem cell transplant or receive chest radiation. Opdivo Qvantig can harm your unborn baby.
Well, I'll tell him not to take it. And now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Or her. Elon Musk's Starlink network has apologized after experiencing an outage that left thousands without internet connections for several hours. Quote, the network issue has been resolved. Starlink service has been restored. The company's official X account wrote Thursday evening, quoting, again, we understand how important connectivity is and apologize for the disruption, unquote. Musk then reposted the message, having previously apologized for the outage personally and reassuring users that it would only be temporary. Quote, SpaceX will remedy the root cause to ensure it doesn't happen again, he said. Thousands of reports flooded the Down Detector website on Thursday. 65% cited a total blackout. A San Francisco chef was ousted from his restaurant after an influencer's complaints about an interaction with him went viral. This sounds so modern, I can't stand it. Keith's Cafe, which opened in Hayes Valley earlier this year, announced this week that the business cut ties with the chef and co-owner Luke Sung and would temporarily close due to the blowback. Food influencer at It's Carla BB alleged in a TikTok video this week that the chef at a local restaurant had belittled her after she visited for a promotional meal, dismissing her number of followers as insufficient. At the time, She had just 15,000 followers. By Friday of this week, she had more than 260,000. So, outrage works. The incident is the latest example of the fractious dynamic between chefs and influencers and the power of social media in shaping restaurants' fortunes. The influencer did not name Keith's Cafe or Sung in the original video. Commenters quickly identified both from her description of the business. That business later came forward with an apology. Quote, our chef's behavior was unacceptable and he is no longer part of the team as a co-owner, a chef, or in any other way, said the restaurant posting on Instagram. We want to create a space that's welcoming and respectful to everyone. In this instance, we failed to do so, unquote. Sung, the chef, owner, no more, apologized to the influencer personally, according to the post, but the influencer said in a follow-up video that she hadn't heard from the owner. The influencer did not respond to a request for comment, nor could Sung. Sung sang blue. Have your Google Home, Nest speakers, or hubs been impacted by strange glitches where they struggle to comprehend with commands? If so, it's not just you. Google has officially acknowledged an array of issues affecting these products, offered an apology, and promised to fix them. This according to HotHardware.com. The acknowledgement and promised fixes were announced by Google Home and Nest's chief product officer, Anish Katukaran, by his official X account. Expressing concern over the issues, Anish stated, quote, I sincerely apologize for what you're experiencing and feeling. He then added that Google has heard your complaints and will take swift action to rectify the situation. The acknowledgement came on the heels of an overwhelming number of complaints from users who observed an obvious decline in reliability. Some of the comments and complaints were even more severe than mere command misrepresentation or misinterpretation. For example, some complained that when attempting to switch off a particular gadget, a different one would actually switch off. Users feeling like they've lost control over their tech. Google was then forced to apologize for the inconvenience. Don't be evil, guys. I know it's maybe too late. The jail in New Orleans, from which 10 inmates escaped in May, mistakenly released another detained man this week. According to authorities, Khalil Bryan, 30 years old, was being held on a $100,000 bench warrant related to a failure to appear for arraignment on charges of aggravated assault with a firearm, domestic abuse, child endangerment, and home invasion. He was also being held on other charges, as well as a warrant from a neighboring jurisdiction. Nonetheless, while processing a bond posted for another inmate by an unrelated person, deputies for the sheriff's office operating the jail failed properly to verify the inmate's identity and mistakenly released Bryan instead. That's according to the office of the local DA, Jason Williams. His office said in a statement, Bryan's erroneous release underscored that, quote, ongoing systemic issues surround the exercise of custody and control over detained individuals. The failure to properly confirm the identity of an inmate prior to release is an unacceptable lapse that presents a real and immediate risk to public safety. The DA's office said. A statement from the sheriff in charge of the jail, Susan Hudson, said her office took, quote, full responsibility for the clerical error that led to the mistaken release of Khalil Bryant. We offer our sincere apology to the public, our law enforcement partners, and the court. This incident was the result of human error, a misidentification based on a shared last name between two individuals. We're conducting a full internal investigation, and I can confirm that disciplinary actions will occur, unquote. Hudson pledged that her office would collaborate with efforts to ensure Bryan's swift return to custody, unquote. The sheriff, as we in New Orleans know, has been under withering political criticism after the 10 men in custody at the jail escaped on May 16th, one of the largest jailbreaks in U.S. history. I think she might spend less on a re-election campaign. U.S. carrier Alaska Airlines has grounded its fleet due to an unspecified IT issue. At the time of writing in the Register this week, on the 21st, the airline's website includes a banner that reads, "We are experiencing issues with our IT systems. We apologize for the inconvenience and are working to resolve the issues." Unquote. On social media, it stated, "Alaska Airlines is experiencing an IT outage affecting operations. A temporary ground stop is in place. We apologize for the inconvenience. If you're scheduled to fly tonight, please check your flight status before heading to the airport." The IT incident is clearly one reason why just 11 Alaska Airlines flights are in the air. But the airline has said nothing about the nature of the incident. A ransomware gang is an obvious suspect, as in recent weeks. This is according to Register again. As in recent weeks, it has targeted airlines, maybe even the Alaska Airlines-owned Hawaiian Airlines, which experienced its own cybersecurity incident in late June. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, and now, it's a crypto winner. Crypto trading platform WooX paused withdrawal services after a cybersecurity breach affected several accounts, leading to $14 million in losses. This is according to Cointelegraph, which covers the industry. 9 user accounts experienced unauthorized withdrawals on Thursday, said the WooX team, said in an X post. Why, that's X post XO. The team added that the incident has since been contained. The incident was quickly detected, and as a precaution, withdrawals were paused. Many of the withdrawals were blocked. We've already contacted the affected users, and all unauthorized withdrawals will be covered. Unquote. Cointelegraph reached out to WooX, but was unable to obtain a response from the trading platform. Crypto hacks continue to be a significant problem affecting crypto users, causing billions of dollars in financial losses. That's good, right? And that's repellent to prospective crypto users. Really? And hinders the widespread adoption of the asset class. If you think it's an asset. I think it's a liability class, but that's just... At least 3 crypto exchange platforms suffered hacks or cybersecurity exploits in the last 2 weeks of July. We're not even through with July. Losses from crypto hacks crossed $3.1 billion so far this year. Where'd that money come from? Yes, I'm looking at you. Losses to crypto hacks, exploits, and scams spiked to that number in the year. But the blockchain security firm Certiq says the second quarter was a decline in the total number of hacks. First half saw more than $2.47 billion in losses. 52% decrease in value lost in the second quarter. So if you're going to buy crypto, buy in the second quarter. Phishing currently accounts for the highest number of security incidents so far this year. 132 security incidents, 410 million stolen. Overall, wallet compromises were the most costly attack vector in the first half of this year. Quote, as phishing campaigns grow increasingly deceptive, it's viral for users to adopt strong security habits, avoid clicking unknown links, double-check domain authenticity, enable multi-factor authentication, and consider using hardware wallets for key storage, said Certiq. The Ethereum blockchain was one of the more popular targets, accounting for 70 hacks. Ethereum's dominance in decentralized finance and smart contract activity make it an attractive target, with billions of dollars locked in protocols, according to Certiq. Feels like a crypto winner to me. And now news of the morn. Just just to warm up from a crypto winter.
Soft, listen to the war. We can listen to the war.
Ocean temperatures soared to record highs in 2023, with marine heat waves, prolonged stretches of unusually warm water, shattering records for intensity, duration, and global coverage. Researchers in a study published this week in the journal Science, what do they know, suggest these extremes may be more than just another milestone in a warming world. The findings offer the most comprehensive look yet at a year when vast swaths of ocean turned dangerously warm, threatening marine life, disrupting global weather. Aside from that, unlike land-based heat waves, marine heat waves unfold slowly, and they can persist for months or even years. The North Atlantic event that dominated the headlines began in mid-2022, lasted for 525 consecutive days. In the Southwest Pacific, marine heat waves shattered previous records for both geographic reach and staying power. News of the warm.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time on these radio stations and on your audio device whenever you want it. Hope to join with you then. The email address for this program, a chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts and the playlist heard here on, along with a lot of stuff to read and enjoy, maybe, all at harryshear.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halstead and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the home of the homeless.
Thank you. Thank you very much.